box. Out of the east wall of the box comes my piece of 14-gauge wire. It curves around into a great big loop of 3 feet in diameter, and the wire goes back into the west wall of the box. So I've got a continuous loop of wire, the two ends of this box that is the signal generator. The wire has a circumference of, let me pick a number, 10 feet. I'm never going to go above 1 megahertz, where the wavelength would be 300 meters, 1,000 feet. I've got 10 feet of wire in that loop. I'm operating at a frequency low enough that I never, and the wavelength is 1,000 feet. In the middle of that wire at the 6 o'clock position, at this curved wire coming out of this 1 cubic foot box, I got my clamp-on ammeter, and now I'm measuring the AC current flowing in that loop of wire with this clamp-on ammeter, and I'm looking for 10% accuracy. Do you think I can get that? Over to you, Glenn, K2LIW.
Carefully constructed, you could do better than that.
Okay, so in that circumstance, I believe that the clamp-on ammeter with my shielded Hall effect device in the middle of it, that 99% of what it sees is the magnetic field created in the 14-gauge chunk of wire connected to that signal generator, and it is telling me, by way of the magnetic field it senses, it is telling me what is the instantaneous current flowing in that piece of 14-gauge wire. If I look at that oscilloscope, and I look at it 1 microsecond at a time, at each microsecond, I know the direction of the current flow, I know the magnitude of the current flow, by way of the magnetic field I'm sensing with that super clamp-on ammeter that I just described to you. Does that whole situation seem to make some sense? K2LIW.
Question, Dick.
It does, Dick, and the proportion of the current will be extremely close. It'll almost be perfect.
So in other words, when I said 10% accuracy, I mean less than 10% error, and I think you're agreeing with that. John, you've got a question as we slowly build up this argument, this mental Katunkin experiment. KC2WGB, K2LIW.
Very good, Dick. Yeah, well, Glenn's here, too. Okay, you have your wire going through your clamp on DC. You say you're only looking at the magnetic steady-state field, okay? What happens with the bar magnet in the same core?
If I put a bar magnet in the middle of that clamp-on ammeter and close the drawers, as I'm inserting the bar magnet, as I'm closing the drawers, there's a number of things I can do that create a transient. But once the transient settles down, the steady-state magnetic field of the bar magnet in the middle of the drawers is creating a magnetic field at right angles to the JAWS method of sensing magnetic field. They're looking for a circumferential magnetic field. Right-hand rule, the way your fingers wrap around the wire, that orientation of magnetic field is what the JAWS are sensing. Your bar magnet sitting in the center is not creating that kind of a magnetic field. It's creating a steady-state magnetic field, but it's at right angles to the JAWS. And my guess is you would get essentially no response when it settled down. Let's see if Glenn agrees with that. KC2QIQ, K2LAW in the group.
What's interesting is that the AC signals, you don't see a big difference. As long as you stay within the parameters of the saturation flux of the core material. So in other words, if it's like a typical, 2,000 Gauss peak flux density, you won't see too much of a difference while an AC swing. Where you will see a difference is that if you were to put a magnet in the air gap, in place of the air gap, but basically what you'll see is that you've created an offset flux in the core, so that instead of that thing having plus or minus 2,000 Gauss in either direction for saturation, you'll have extended the saturation flux density, depending on how strong the magnet is, in one quadrant of the core. So where's that useful? Well, if you're using ferrite, which has a very, very quick saturation, where if you don't have an air gap in it, when you put DC current in it, it'll start to saturate, you'll saturate the ferrite very quickly. But by putting the magnet in there, it'll allow you to pump amps of current not saturating the currents, will have high inductance. You flip the currents around the other direction, it'll saturate instantaneously. K2AW, KC2, QIQ.
Fantastic. Hey, Glenn, John, you at first said what happens when we put in a bar magnet, and I assume you're putting the bar magnet with the same orientation as the piece of 18-gauge wire. However, you take the jaws of your clamp-on ammeter, you open the jaws. You've got a gap at the 12 o'clock position of those jaws. And if you take one of your small neodymium magnets and put it across the gap of those jaws, boy, you're going to measure a whopping big magnetic field in the Hall effect device. I think there's a reasonably good capability of saturating the Hall effect device by doing that, but at least your indication before it hit saturation would go hard over to one side. You would know that you put a magnetic field across the gap of those jaws. That's what I think would happen. Let's see if Glenn sees it the same way. KC2QIQ, K2LIW.
It will definitely saturate the Hall effect device. As a matter of fact, if in most cases, I would say don't do it if you like your Hall effect device. There's a very good chance that what you'll do is you'll actually break your Hall effect device by putting a magnet inside the gap half length. So that's typically a trick that's done in power inductors. In other words, when you're using something like ferrite that doesn't have a distributed air gap, and what you want to do is you want to use it in one direction as a DC inductor, so this way you can have high inductance, which basically looks like you have a high permeability ferrite, but you want to run a DC current with it and get that nice high inductance without saturating. But if you take that magnet and put it into a sensitive Hall effect device, you could destroy the Hall effect device. KC2QIQ.
Now, let me go one step further here. John, being a pretty smart guy, he's not going to use one of his super strong neodymium magnets. He's going to take the weakest magnet he has ever owned. He's going to open up the jaws and put that magnet across the jaws, north pole to the right, south pole to the left of the open jaw. If that magnet is weak enough, I believe this machine that we've just mentally described, mentally created in our heads, would sense the amount of magnetic field. In fact, that would be a beautiful way of measuring the amount of magnetization of his weak magnet by putting it across the jaws of that clamp-on ammeter. Does that sound reasonable, Glenn? KC2QIQ, K2LIW?
Yeah, actually, things like that, I mean, there are devices like that that exist where you can actually test even high-power magnets. Nice way to do that is basically just to take a large C-core or a C and an I-core, something with a relatively large geometry, and basically build a Hall effect device, and then you can actually have some, one-inch bar stock of ferrite core and put the magnet in one of the side sections. And then basically what you do is you close the core, and you can actually determine the intensity of your magnets.
Okay, in my opinion, we're making a lot of progress. I'm going to show you where I'm going with this now. I slowly have got you to almost agree that this method of using a clamp-on ammeter with a Hall effect device is a machine that measures almost purely magnetic field. By way of the current in that 18-gauge or 14-gauge piece of wire, this loop of wire coming out of my one-cubic-foot box signal generator, which can make DC or AC slow currents, I've now got a device that measures almost exclusively the magnetic field around that 14-gauge piece of wire that I clamped on, and my clamp-on ammeter with this shielded Hall effect device has almost no E-field sensitivity. It's almost a pure H-field sensor is what I am advocating. Do you somewhat agree with that, Glenn? I know you want to study it a little bit more, but what you've heard so far, does it sound like it's possibly a pure H-field sensor? KC2QIQ, K2LIW?
I would say that's pretty accurate.
Okay. As I now slightly change the design of a clamp-on ammeter, I open up those jaws wider and wider. I haven't changed anything in the design, but I've opened up the jaws so that it now becomes a straight-out piece of ferrite rod. Have I changed the fact that it can still sense magnetic field flowing down that ferrite? you, Glenn, K2LIW?
Of course, absolutely.
Well, first of all, I don't know what the absolutely means. Absolutely, yes, I can straighten it out as a straight-out ferrite rod, and it's almost a pure H-field sensor. Is that what you're agreeing to? How would you, Glenn, K2LIW?
Well, here again, it's going to be an H-field sensor, very accurate in one path length of whatever the path length of that of the geometry of that piece of core. So, in other words, within one path length of that core, it will be an extremely strong sensor of just H-field.
Fantastic. I'm going to open up those drawers. It's now a straight-out piece of ferrite rod. It is 1 foot long, tip to tip, and in the middle is the Hall Effect device, in the middle of the clamp-on ammeter's light structure. It's 1 foot long. I'm not going to make any measurements higher than 1 megahertz, where the wavelength is almost 1,000 feet, and I've only got 1 foot of ferrite. So I'm way below the wavelength problem. I think you're telling me now I can orient this thing east-west, parallel to the ground. The broadcast station, the AM broadcast station at 1 megacycle, is north of me. I am now sensing essentially 99% only the magnetic field being radiated by that broadcast station. Does that seem to make some sense? Over to you, Glenn, K2LIW.
No, it really doesn't, because what's actually happening there, Dick, is that, yes, the H-field is very intense in the first path length between the gap of the core, in other words, between the ends of the core and the outside edge, but there still is a very, very strong E-field relationship in the north and south end of that structure. So, in other words, there's a hyperbolic pattern of E-field off of each side. So, yes, in the broad side, it's going to be very, very strong H-field sensing, but on the end-to-end, on the tip-to-tip, it's going to be a very strong E-field detector.
But with that particular orientation, where the ferrite rod that used to be a clamp-on ammeter is now parallel to the ground east-west, and the broadcast station is north of me. The broadcast station is more than a mile away, so that the spherical wave coming out of that broadcast antenna became almost a pure planar wave of E and H when it got to me. I am claiming that with that orientation, I'm not changing the azimuth elevation or whatever of my sensing machine. I am saying that I'm sensing only the H field, and if you're saying that it's starting to sense the E field, when it was clamped onto the piece of 14 gauge wire that was in the loop coming out of the signal generator, it was a pure H field sensor then. It did not sense any E-field. All I did is to very slowly straighten it out into a straight rod when it used to be a round clamp-on ammeter. As I straightened it out, where did it suddenly flip from pure H-field sensor to now you're telling me it is a pure H-field plus E-field sensor? When did it suddenly start sensing E-field? What did I do wrong? Over to you, Glenn, K2LIW.
Well, it's nothing that you're doing wrong. It's just that when you have a closed gap, in other words, when there's no gap and the path length is closed, the only possible way to get a transfer of energy into that field is to cross through the center, through that right angle, and then this way you can detect it. Now, when you start opening up the bar so that you have a large air gap in between the path length and the outside, yes, that strong H-field relationship still exists, but only in the first path length. But what's happening is that when you go beyond the first path length, you're going to have a hyperbolic function of E-field detection that takes place off either end. Loopstick antennas were used as radio directional finding antennas for years, and if you've ever held one in your hand, or they used to be on the top of old directional finding radios where you could actually point the ends of the loop stick towards your vertically polar, and it was holding the loop stick horizontal, you could point it towards your vertically polarized antenna, quarter wave antenna, transmission station, and by pointing the ends of the loop stick towards the vertically polarized antenna, you could actually get a very, very strong radio directional finding capability.
Yes, you've got a very deep note. If it's a vertically polarized broadcast station, and I've got a horizontal loop stick parallel to the ground, and I rotate it in azimuth so that the end of the loop stick faces toward the broadcast station, your H field is trying to go into the ferrite rod now in a radial manner instead of an axial manner. The sensing coil is not sensitive to that. You get a very deep null. You direction find by looking for the null. Do you agree with that, Glenn? K2LAW?
I guess it depends on the radio and which one you use. There, I've seen some things where you pointed out it wasn't a null. It was actually an extremely strong signal. In other words, like if you were to use a loop antenna and you hold a loop antenna up in the air and yes, you find a null and you can do that. The loop stick antennas that they used to put on top of the radio directional finding for like finding beacons in the marine radios, you could find the beacon just by pointing it right off the end of the loop stick and it would point north and south directly off and you could mark it off in degrees. That's how accurate they were. And that thing points like an arrow. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
I think I agree with that. But if I take the linear loop stick that's in a normal pocket-type transistorized radio, and you know the orientation of that loop in there, and if you've got the radio sitting on the table in the normal manner, and the loop stick is usually along the longest dimension of the pocket radio, and you rotate the radio so that the longest dimension of the radio is now aimed toward the broadcast station. I've done that on many occasions. You get an extremely deep null. You're now aiming the end of the loop stick rod directly at the broadcast station, and you will get a deep null. I'm amazed you haven't seen that, Glenn. KQLAW, go ahead, Glenn.
I haven't used a lot of the other, you know, radios, like an AM radio with the loop stick to try to radio directional find. I do know that they're very, very sensitive to position, and you're right. You turn an old AM radio with a loop stick in one direction or the other. One end you'll get a strong null, and another way, boy, that thing comes in gangbusters. But I've never actually looked at the internal loop stick and then used it as a, like, pointed towards the broadcast station. But it is definitely interesting how that works.
Because that loop stick rod wants the H field to be parallel to the rod to give maximum AC response of that magnetic field into the rod. And when you aim the rod at the broadcast station, the H field is now at right angles to the way the rod wants to respond. It's now giving it a radial magnetic field in the rod as opposed to an axial magnetic field. It responds to an axial magnetic field. It does not respond to a radial magnetic field. The coil of wire around it can't see that, if you know what I mean. Does that seem to make some sense so far, Glenn? Go ahead, K2LAW.
I think what's really going on here, though, Dick, is that the E and the H field are both being sensed by that device. I think that depending on the geometry and when you start doing the analysis, so when you start getting closer and closer to the antenna, what is it actually sensing at that time? I think you could say strongly that the largest part or the dominant part of the detection is more H field than E field. That I'll definitely give you.
And some of what you're saying is the faith that has been instilled to us by our engineering courses that you cannot have a changing H without a changing E and so on. And that is the faith that we've been told until now. We're about to run out of time. Have you ever heard the name Maynard Hill? Maynard Hill, Dr. Maynard Hill, I believe, beautiful guy from Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory, wrote an article that had a huge impact on me in Flying Models Magazine, 1972, in which he built a pure E-field sensor. On two ends of a wooden yardstick, you put a polonium source, and between the polonium source on to each end, you bring it to an operational amplifier. The output of the operational amplifier, you put it to a Dawson Bell movement. That is a beautiful sensor of the E-field, where the ionosphere is around 300 kilovolts, more positive compared to the Earth. You hold the yardstick parallel to the Earth, it measures 0 volts. Tip one end of the yardstick up, and it measures the voltage immediately. and he made a stabilization for radio control model airplanes out of that. He recently broke another one of his 18 world records by flying a model airplane with that kind of a stabilization network. A radio-controlled, unpiloted model airplane flew it from Newfoundland to Ireland, and he did that in 2003. But have you heard the name Maynard Hill? Please Google search Maynard Hill. Read a couple of his articles. It's the next step in this discussion. We've essentially run out of time. I wonder if you've heard of him before, Glenn. KC2QIQ, KQLIW.
Yes, I have, Dick. Very interesting gentleman, and some very, very interesting articles. I've read quite a few of his works. Very impressive individual. And, yes, and, you know, I definitely, you know, have come across, you know, E-field, you know, strong E-field sensors, strong H-field sensors that are really kind of optimized in one direction or the other. But the only thing I really don't really give you an honest answer on is, you know, can you really have an H-field without an E-field or E-field without an H-field? I would say from everything, but you can have situations like current in a wire where, you know, you have more current than...
Okay, the machine has run out of time. I'm coming in by another means. We'll pick this up next week, Glenn. I didn't get quite as far as I'd like to, but we've made progress. We're discussing methods of E-field sensing. We'll be discussing that with Maynard Hill next week. We've gone 80% of the way of what I want to with H-field sensors. We have to worry a little bit about the faith that we've been given and never challenged it. As the number of things in life we should challenge. We'll hit this next week. I sure hope you can be there again next week, Glenn. It's been fun. KC2QIQ, I can hear you on the input, don't worry. KQLIW, and Tom, thank you, and be kind to each other, you guys. See you next week. KQLIW, clear. Over to you, Red Hat.
KQLIW, BE3GIW.
Very fine, Glenn. And Jim, BE3JIW, go right ahead. Sound like you want to make a comment. You've got it, Jim. What are those Canadians up hearing? I hope you weren't timed out too much tonight. You've got it, Jim.
Good evening. It is Jim, BE3JIW. No, well, it might have been timed out of the notes. The Mississauga node, it itself does not time out. Even at 3 minutes, the repeater will announce timeout and it'll keep playing the audio. So I don't get timed out. Scott may be in the East End. You know, I mean, we're what? Something around 15 or 20 Fahrenheit. We didn't get any snow here. The ground, lawns are still clear here. It's amazing. We've got clear lawns. But anyway, I was listening to your talking about the meters. And there's an awful lot of digital clamp-on meters that do not do AC. I think the meters that do DC are doing something different because the major number of the meters do not do DC. So you might want to think about how does a meter do DC, because it's different from the way a simple clamp-on can do AC current. And some of them can only do large amounts of current, by the way. Their current scale is pretty crude. Like the net, I just thought I'd throw that in. I had another wild concept, but I don't know if it's too late to mention it.
Very fine, Jim. Without a doubt, the majority of clamp-on AC meters, the purely passive ones, are AC only. Clamp-on hand meters, the majority of them are AC only. There is a very small number, very few, of DC sensing type clamp-on hand meters. They require an extra battery to run the whole effect device that's inside. They require operation of the balancing control. They're a little bit of a pain to use. You have to close the drawers, balance the thing, open the drawers, put in your piece of wire to make the measurement. The whole effect type with the extra battery inside will allow you to measure DC current of a clamp-on ammeter. But they're quite rare, quite a bit more expensive. I own one. I'm pretty sure they do exist. I'm pretty sure they operate by way of a Hall effect device. Because your coil of wire around the drawers, the ferrite drawers, can measure AC current. The coil of wire cannot measure DC current, just like you cannot put DC voltage through a transformer. That sort of effect. So they do exist. And go ahead with your other comments, Jim. E3JIW, KQIW.
No, I looked at.
From the standpoint of being a meter, I looked at the issue with the gentleman
and started looking at the issue.
And when you said somebody had a meter, that you didn't
on
your average meter. Your signal didn't noise, but are you wanting to go for the hit your DVR of the Super Bowl, or you've got a couple of minutes?
Yeah, go ahead, Jim. Tell us what happened at the Super Bowl. We were hearing little pieces of that by way of the segment tonight, but I did tell that the portions of that stadium in the Portland was knocked out, from what I understand correctly. Go ahead, Jim.
The information I got from the net is the best I have. All I saw was the coverage ran late.
I was watching just to see if
I had caught it, because to get
coverage, I have an antenna. Otherwise, I'm forced to get a simulcast media coverage.
The Super Bowl ad. So I just checked to see I got it. I noticed there was a timer that said 27 minutes into the outage where they stopped playing. I know nothing more of the on the Super Bowl. It's probably on the DVR, but I didn't have a chance to look at it.
It's going to be fun to go back and review that. So, what's your other question? Go ahead, Jim. Keep your eye on it.
Is the electrical portion magnetic? I was thinking, a pilot can buy a set of headphones that noise canceling. They null sound waves approaching the ears. They don't
null sound waves airplanes
at a certain distance in a small area to null sound waves.
Imagine if you could have
a transmitting antenna on your near your receiving antenna, and it could null electromagnetic waves of noise, actually causing resonance of waves in your antenna that are exactly out of phase with the noise, allowing you to only hear the signal. It just occurred to me when you were talking about if they're magnetic waves, maybe there's a way to noise cancel away, noise canceling headphones do. Pleasure hearing the net again.
coming in by a different than normal manner, and I know I'm a lot noisier, and maybe I'm even a little bit too loud. Okay, see you next week. And next week, Glenn and I are going to continue these discussions of E field and H field. Once we start mixing Maynard Hill in there with E field sensors, life gets more interesting, as you'll find. See you next week. Bye bye for now. So to IOW, be clear about listening.
And thanks again.
Bye bye, John.
He said the E3JIW.
You're transmitting.
What do you want? I can just about hear you. Something's wrong here. Go to 147. 147. Yes, see me on 147.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
L repeater system.
And 2 BPM, W4NYF.
Or whatever stuck in the mailbox.
nice and quiet. And, you know, just dropping some stuff off. You know, just costs too much. The price of the gas, man. You know, do a round trip's like $100 with all the new tolls and the gas.
Sure, that puts a damper on everything, too. Because I know there's a lot of ski action going on, but I heard that's also tough. I mean, it's certainly been called up to make snow, and I think they're getting snow upstate from these things that we're getting down here, these little pesky storms. I heard that's even down because of just what you said, a combination of everything, gas, tolls. So, hopefully it'll all rebound. Hopefully this will be the year that everything finally turns around. Anyway, all right. So the answer was no, I didn't go, and of course I always regret it, but I don't regret it for long. I think the older I get, the less I want to sit in the woods freezing my butt off. Instead of sitting somewhere with a nice hot toddy and maybe some female companionship. You know, you reach that age, that's it, and you become a car hunter.
Oh, yeah, I just filed for Social Security 2 weeks ago. So, well, next year, you know, my two cousins pissed me off. My cousin's son called him, texted him, he didn't get back to me. So, a little punishment issued. Ain't gonna be any hunting next year around town. And the other thing that pissed me off was his father, my cousin. Understandably, he changed cars and he had the keys to the house in his other car. You know, but where he was hunting, my other cousin at the ranch down there, she had the keys to my house. And like day after day, I kept asking her to get the keys to the house so I don't have to stick around all the time waiting for you to come home. So, oh yeah. And, oh yeah, I spent the last few days retyping my will, updating it. Cause I gonna go up there and get that all executed. W4NYF.
KB2NQN Mobile. All right, you have the correct spelling of my name, right? It's two L's.
Oh yeah, I left the execute, whatever. Yeah, I left them instructions, then you all the bills.
Nice guy. All right. I thought you were going to tell me you had to go upstate because you had to collect on your Super Bowl box from the firehouse. You know, I was in two pools through work, and I left both sheets on my desk at work, so I think that I had one of the numbers that came out. They were kind of funky numbers, and I knew I had funky numbers, so maybe I caught something. What else? What else do I have? My son's going to transfer down to University of Florida in May. He'll be heading down there. So then that'll be one less mouth to feed by me. And down south is looking, you know, rosier and rosier every month that goes by. Dad's doing good down there. I got him hired a private attendant for him, and it's working out really, really well now. He's much happier, putting on weight. She's great. I'm sorry I didn't do this sooner. Instead of dealing with that agency crap, you know, through the insurance company, so. And I got some other battles to fight with his insurance company, but for all intents and purposes, things are really stabilized down there, so I'm going to be ahead with that now. And I'll be heading down there at the end of the month, too.
All right. Going under the apartment buildings here. Right about now. So, I don't know. I'll be on the other side in like a minute.
And I'll keep blabbing away, though. So I think you could copy me. And we're busy at the hospital. Actually, it's got a little quieter over the last month or so. I'd say since the storm, it kind of quieted down. And we're expecting the Jacob inspection to be happening. That's a joint commission, which the hospital depends on for monies from the state and federal government. It might even be happening today. At least that was the scuttlebutt. So I'll know what, by the time I walk in the door, when I see long faces, so it's time. And I'm just going over the Clearview Expressway. And I'll be making a southerly turn on Frankie Lewis Boulevard. So hopefully you're out from under, because I don't think there's much traffic happening there. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, police commissioner said the crime rate was, I think they had like no homicides for a few weeks because the weather was too cold for the boys to come out.
That always happens, always happens. But I'm sure they'll pick it up again. They gotta, you know, pick up the pace. Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know if Richie
on any slap seconds to me. You know, I really needed some.
Yeah. Well, I still hang around with my physician assistant friend, and I'm in the process of rekindling something with my old college sweetheart, somebody who I should have married years ago. So that was a kind of a surprise, but it's hot and heavy. Roberta ended up with some octogenarian. I don't know what's going on there. Really, I don't talk to her too much anymore. She's ticked me off, and I think I stay away from her now. But, yeah, you're much younger than the geezer she's hanging out with now.
Oh, yeah, I remember in the Port Authority, I had one of the girls up. You know, she was a nice guy, and wound up being an agent, airport agent, and that's when I asked her out, and she goes, she'd say, I don't know, something about no in-house dating or something. I'm like, what the? You know, you never know, someday I may be your boss. So, actually, years later that came true. She became a big, big boss. And she wanted to marry my immediate supervisor. So, it was like, what happened to that no in-house dating call?
Prognosticator, and that's who we believe.
Decatur, yes. Yeah, the other one, that
Yeah, you guys just let it drop all the way. Hopefully this is better. We'll make it a short transmission. Yeah, that one little section in Oyster Bay is a problem. I'm coming up out of Oyster Bay now into Norwich. The first part of my trip is good out of going through part of Milton. I was just telling you about the Super Bowl that I was at my friend's house in Fort Washington, and it was just he and his wife and his daughter having spaghetti and meatballs. Enjoyed the game. And talking about San Francisco having a rough time in the first half, really. The struggle there. Back to you, Lou, and hopefully this is better now.
Yes, that was better. I let everything drop, though. But again, the east dropped out. I don't understand it. So I listened on the west. I could hear it. And I heard everything. And yeah, we were at a Super Bowl party last night also. But we left about 10. I wanted to get to bed. So. Yeah, East Norwich. The home of Jackie the Joke Man Marling. Formerly of the Howard Stern Show. East Norwich, New York. I wonder if there's a Norwich or a West Norwich. Why East Norwich? Back to you.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, is that where he lives? He lives here? Okay. Yeah, they have the Rockland Steakhouse here, right to my right here in the corner of 25A and 106. So, don't go there. It's way overpriced for their steaks and everything and that they charge for in there. And, I don't know if there's a West Norwich or South Norwich.